So hello everyone and welcome to WCET Frontiers Pod, where along with passionate educational leaders, we explore practical solutions and innovations for technology-enhanced teaching and learning in higher education. I am your host, Dr. Elaine Villanueva-Bernal, STEM digital learning strategist for diversity, equity, and inclusion for WCET, and a full-time lecturer at California State University, Long Beach. For this episode, we'll be talking about math equity in the California Community College and California State University systems. And we have Denise Castro, pronouns she, her, hers. She is a policy analyst at the Education Trust West. Before joining the Education Trust West, Denise was a program coordinator for Students Making a Change, SMAC. Denise supervised SMAC's fellowship program, developed the leadership of students of color, managed policy and advocacy efforts, and monitored campaign goals to institutionalize equity in California community colleges. Prior to that, Denise worked for the University of California, Merced, where she taught undergraduate classes in sociology. Denise also carried out quantitative research and co-conducted research on racial health disparities, racism, and social movements as a graduate research assistant at the University of California, Merced. Since an early age, Denise has mentored youth of color and first-generation college students while working for Mission Graduates and Mission Girls. As a daughter of immigrant parents from Mexico, and being the first in her family to graduate college, Denise is passionate about educational equity and racial justice. Denise holds a BA in psychology and an MA in sociology from the University of California, Merced. Welcome, Denise.
Thank you, Elaine. Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be joining today's podcast and to be contributing to the conversation on math equity in California's community colleges and CSUs.
Yeah, if you could tell us about your current work. I was reading the article about AB 705 and 1705, if I'm correct.
Yes, I'm happy to share a little bit more about our current work. So a little bit of context in California, the Education Trust West, we've been advocating for policies to ensure that students have access to transfer level courses and are not placed into remedial education in California's community colleges. And I could share a little bit about the importance of this. So prior to the reform of AP 705, for instance, when we look at in fall 2015, Black and Latino students were less likely to be placed into transfer level math classes as compared to their white counterparts. And this created huge racial disparities. And prior to the legislation, 80% of incoming community college students in California were denied access to transfer level math classes, and they were required to take remedial courses instead, and it didn't count towards their bachelor's degree program. And this caused millions of students to be excluded, you know, from courses where they could have been successful. Mm-hmm. And this disproportionately impacted students of color. And what we see is that the Education Trust West and a lot of advocacy partners, we championed around AB 705 in 2017. And the legislature unanimously passed AB 705. In the legislation, it required community colleges to use high school grades as a primary basis for course placement and in English and math courses. And it also restricted colleges from requiring students to take remedial courses. And it set a standard to make sure that students are placed into courses that maximize their success and likelihood of completing these transfer level college courses in 1 year. And what the impact of this policy, it was really transformational. What we saw is that colleges significantly decreased the number of remedial courses that they offered. And we saw that it doubled, access to transfer level math courses. And we saw completion rates, increase significantly. For instance, when we take a look at math, it increased from 26% to 50% statewide. And this, what we also see is that there was also really huge, what we see today is like there was disparities in the in implementation. So there was inequitable implementation across California. What we saw in some community colleges, they've reached 100% completion, 100% implementation of the law. But in other colleges, specifically colleges that enrolled more than 2,000 Black students, they continue to remain having multiple sections of remedial math course offerings. And this decreased Black students' likelihood of completing the coursework, you know, going on to their and get their degree. And then right now, the Education Trust West, we're advocating for a policy that is connected to AB 705, which helped to have these significant outcomes for students and student gains. And the legislation is called AB 1705. And it really, the hope is that it helps provide clarity and additional guidance to ensure that, you know, all students are benefiting from remedial education reform efforts. And the legislation does four key things. It makes clear that colleges must enroll students in math and English classes where they're going to have the greatest likelihood of completing these transfer level course requirements. It also clarifies to colleges that, you know, you should not be requiring students to repeat math classes that they already passed in high school. And it provides greater protection also for the students to ensure that they're not required to take extra math classes that, you know, that don't count towards their degree of graduating, of transferring of their to their degree goals. And also the fourth is clarifies a responsibility for colleges to ensure that students have the support that they need to be successful and make progress towards their goals.
Yeah, I mean, I'm hearing that, you know, one of the biggest problems is that inequitable implementation of that assembly bill. And I'm curious, what were some of the factors within those community colleges that, you know, led to those inequitable implementation?
Yeah. So one of those factors is when we look at the way that students are being placed into the courses. Students were being placed into courses with standardized testing, which we know that standardized testing does a really poor job of predicting college readiness for classes. So that was one significant barrier that students faced. And the second around is around counselors, you know, advising students to enroll into remedial math courses. And when I think what happens often is that, you know, when we think about a student's experience, you know, imagine, you know, being a first generation college student, you know, you work really hard, you know, you make it into college, you know, you finally did it, you're excited.
But
the first message that you get, you know, from your counselors, you know, from your, or from taking the placement test is that you're not good enough, you're not prepared, and that you're gonna enroll in remedial courses that do not earn you credit, and that you haven't learned enough. You know, those messaging is really damaging. It's demoralizing. And also they're incorrect.
Yes.
Because what the data tells us is that students are capable. If you place students into the transfer level courses instead of remedial courses, and you provide students support in these transfer level courses, they're significantly more likely to succeed and pass the course and go on and continue their education. But if you do the reverse, if you place students into these remedial courses, their likelihood of completion is really low. And it's, we also conducted focus groups on students to, you know, talk to them about their experiences in being placed in remedial courses. And what the students talked about, you know, experiencing like mental health issues and like feeling, you know, depressed in the class, feeling, you know, a lot of anxiety and stress and, you know, not feeling like good enough. And that is not the message that we want to be sharing to our students, but instead we want to provide them really encouraging messages that we believe in you. We want you to succeed and we're going to support you in making sure that you reach your educational goals.
So I'm curious, you know, what is being done, you know, at this community college, at the CSUs, you know, as far as that messaging? Right. And yeah, I totally, you know, it totally resonates with me as far as like, yeah, getting that message. You don't have the grades. You don't have the grades to get in, especially in STEM, you know, where it's so competitive and you're always told this messaging of like, yeah, you don't have the grades. You only need these kinds of grades. Right. What's being done as far as, you know, maybe working with faculty, working with advisors so that students are encourage rather than, you know, getting this, you know, really disempowering messaging?
Yeah. So one thing that is being done is in community colleges that have been really bright spots and like leaders in really transforming the way that they're supporting students in math courses, they have begun to develop co-requisite supports in the transfer level classes.
Mm-hmm.
So what this model does is that, you know, I think traditionally remedial education, what it requires students to take, you know, multiple courses in before being placed into the, you know, credit bearing transfer level course. And the co-requisite model completely changes that. Instead, it says, okay, is that you're going to be placed directly into the college level, transfer level class that's going to earn credit for college in math. And we're going to implement a supplemental course right alongside that transfer level course. And it's essentially embedded support. And what this can look like is that additional class time with the professor, it can include additional tutoring and embedded instruction within the class. And provide students that support while they're in the transfer level class. And what we have seen that college have developed and enrolled students in co-requisite courses, these support mm-hmm. courses have demonstrated really promising results. When okay. we look at students who have completed the transfer level courses with the co-requisite model, they have a 30 percentage point higher completion in one term than students who start in the traditional remedial courses. And then we see this model that is being implemented not only in California, but other states such as Colorado, Indiana, Georgia, and Tennessee have also begin to develop similar co-requisite models and have been seeing dramatic results. And these results are really mm-hmm. particular in supporting Black and Latino students in these co-requisite models. So this is something we're really advocating for also in California, to provide this embedded support within the transfer level classes to ensure that, you know, the messaging that students do get is that, you know, we believe in you, that you took this huge step and we want to celebrate you because we know that you're capable, you're smart, you're talented, and we want to offer you the opportunity to enroll in this rigorous and supportive math classroom with the right support that you need.
Got it. Thank you for sharing that. Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm hearing that there has been some, you know, there has been success with the co-requisite model, and that students are able to, you know, complete their classes and everything. But what I'm curious about, you know, as you talked about the co-requisite model, do you have a sense of what factors into a successful achievement, I mean, a successful implementation of those co-requisite models, like, you know, especially in math?
Yes, I'm happy to share a little bit more. I think one of the critical things is that, you know, developing, you know, really culturally sensitive curriculum, you know, and teaching practices mm-hmm. that include, you know, validating and affirming students' experience and promoting a sense of belonging within the classroom. Also ensuring, you know, focusing on building strong relationships among the students, the faculty, and the staff, and also applying equitable grading practices such as, you know, options to redo work to encourage this continuous improvement, and also ensuring that we think through also, like, hiring equitable, you know, oriented, you know, diverse faculty and instructors who are committed to this,
yes,
to this
yeah.
work in addition.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
And then thinking also about, like, even providing, like, implicit bias training for faculty and staff who are going to be teaching these courses. And I think, like, all of these factors contribute in supporting, you know, into developing, you know, a classroom that is going to be really supportive to our students that are mm-hmm. going to, that might, you know, think, you know, that they need a little bit more support. And then by creating these classrooms that are really focused, you know, designed equitably and ensure that they're proven provided that support, you know, are going to support our students to be successful.
In speaking about, you know, the numbers at which students are succeeding in co-requisite courses or not succeeding in, you know, remedial courses, right? Yeah, there is a disparity between Black, Latino, White, and Asian students. And I'm curious, while, you know, and I've read my share of reports too, where Asian students seem to be doing better in a lot of these, especially STEM classes, STEM spaces, right? But I'm curious as far as a disaggregation of data, right? Especially when it comes to looking at how our Asian students are doing, has there been some disaggregation of data when it comes to student success, especially in remedial courses or co-requisite courses? And what are you seeing from your end?
Yes, disaggregating data is critical. When we look among Asian American students, overall, the enrollment in remedial courses has dropped, which is great. It dropped. But when we break down the data even further, we see that Korean and Asian students have lower levels of enrollment into remedial courses. Mm-hmm. And also, there are 9% of them taking the transfer level, the pre-transfer level courses, so they're enrolling into remedial courses. So what we see that is that while it has dropped, there's still, we're still thinking through that Koreans and Asian students there needs to be more focus on them to support them into enrolling into these transfer level courses instead of funneling students into the remedial courses that are not going to support them in graduating. And, you know, instead it's going to be a burden on them. I mean, and increasing their financial costs, you know, that's not going to accumulate credits towards their graduation, towards transferring their degree goal. But we want to make sure that we're focusing and ensuring that providing students opportunity, because they can be successful if we enroll them into the transfer level courses with, and also embedding that that support, such as prerequisite models.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, got it. Has there been any headway as far as looking into other, you know, Asian demographics? You know, I'm thinking, you know, Southeast Asians, right? Vietnamese, Filipino, you know, Southeast Asian populations.
Yeah, there has been, when we look at across all the subgroups within Asian American students, Native Hawaiian and Pacific Islander mm-hmm. students, enrolling into remedial courses, you know, has dropped as a result of AB 705. And when we look at specifically, when we think about for Hawaiian students, previously it was 23% enrolling into remedial courses, and it had dropped to 17% in 2019 and 2020. And when we look, for instance, also at for Vietnamese students, it dropped to 13% enrolling into remedial coursework, as compared to it was previously 19%. And there's a couple of other data points for when we look at, here's another one I wanted to point out. Native Hawaiian and Pacific Islander students, previously in 2018 and 2019, it was 25% of the students were enrolling into remedial courses. And then by 2019, 2020, we see that dropped to 17%.
Wow. And this is within the community college system and the CSU, or one or the other?
Oh, this data is specifically looking within the community college system.
Got it. Wow, that sounds really promising. And I'm curious, what do you see as far as that drop in taking remedial courses? Like, what do you think has contributed to that?
Yeah, one of the most influential contributors has been the legislation AB 705, ensuring that students are being placed into courses that maximize the likelihood of completing their degree and transferring, which maximizes the likelihood of completing the transfer level courses within 1 year. And AB 705 has really supported to improving, you know, all the dramatic results and in opening up access. And in turn, you know, supporting students in completing their requirements for math to be able to continue on with their educational requirements.
Got it. And then so what do you see still as far as continuing barriers? I mean, again, there's that disparity, you know, between, you know, our white and Asian students and our Black and Latino students. What do you see is contributing to that disparity?
Yeah, one thing that is really contributing to the disparity is that, you know, I think how I talked about earlier a little bit is that across the community college system, there's, you know, wide variation in implementation. You know, there's some colleges that are, you know, being really faithful to the law of AB 705 and are, you know, implementing it with fidelity, but other colleges are not. What we see is that some colleges are, you know, rather than complying and following the law, though, which is going to be like what is best for students, they're choosing to wiggle through loopholes, you know, within the law and, you know, continuing to offer large remedial course sections that, you know, that they shouldn't be. And so it's instead of doing what is going to be best for students, they're either, you know, trying to remain in keeping these remedial course sections. And what we believe is that, you know, we should do what the research tells us. And the research tells us is that, you know, remedial courses are not effective, but instead, you know, placing students into transfer level courses and into these co-requisite models are the best practice and are in alignment with the research backed, you know, bill of AB 705. And also why we're also advocating for AB 1705, which will help to close these loopholes that allow colleges to still continue to place students into remedial coursework that are not serving them well.
So I want to go back to what you mentioned about offering implicit bias training to our faculty and in professional development around building culturally sensitive curriculum so that students can, you know, you develop a sense of belonging in the classroom, right? And so I'm curious, I mean, again, there's clearly still a disparity, right? Among, you know, Black and Latino and Asian and white students. So I'm curious if there's been any headway as far as the professional development that's being offered to faculty, to advisors. And I'm thinking about anti-racist training, you know, implicit bias training, especially around anti-Blackness, which is, I feel like, a conversation that really needs to take place in higher education. Since especially in STEM, students are typically in a lot of white spaces. Although, you know, we're trying to increase enrollment, right, and everything, and diversify our student population, they're still largely in these, you know, in the, you know, such spaces. And I'm curious if you can talk about the type of professional development, if there's been any, you know, progress around that in helping our students.
Yes, in California, there is a nonprofit called the California Acceleration Project. They were founded in 2010, and they are led by community college teachers who focus on just that, you know, focus on providing faculty-led professional development in a really equity-focused way, in that making sure that they're developing, supporting educators and developing tailored courses that are focused on transfer level and co-requisite models that really support in being high challenging teaching practices, as well as really supportive pedagogy to support our students of color, our low income students, and really focusing on this, you know, implicit bias training, anti-racist training. And they have been doing this for a long time for our community college system and have been really successful in this approach and supporting through professional development. And as well as, you know, to combine that, those efforts, the Education Trust West, along with other advocacy partners, we advocated for a $64 million budget request to support the implementation of AB 705 across the community college system to really transition away from remedial math classes to improve outcomes in math and reduce equity gaps. And a part of this funding is going to be just for that, you know, for professional development. And our hope is that, you know, this professional development is really used as a tool to really address, how you mentioned, anti-Blackness, and really have, you know, difficult conversations, but that are needed to make sure that we're supporting our Black students, that we're supporting, you know, our students of color to be part of classrooms that are affirming, that are validating to them, that are really creating the sense of, you know, belonging, that you belong here. We want you to be successful. And, you know, this requires faculty to really do, you know, hard work and, you know, in looking at all through their syllabus, investigating what classroom practices are, you know, are working, looking at, you know, who are they being called, who is more likely to be called upon, and asking for, you know, support in that in the way to make sure that we're developing classroom structures and as well as curriculum and pedagogy that are going to be inclusive, and as well as reimagining the way of grading practices, all to support, you know, the ultimate goal of, you know, supporting our, you know, our students of color, our low-income students, our marginalized students to be successful in these courses, which traditionally they have been excluded from, you know, and we no longer want to, you know, to develop, you know, we want to really like radically transform the way that, you know, we're teaching and supporting our students of color. And we hope that this professional development budget allocation that has been secured in this budget can help to support, you know, in doing that work that is critical.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it really sounds like critical work. And I really appreciate that you said that these students have been historically excluded. It's not that they're underserved, I mean, like, yes, underserved, you know, underrepresented, right? Marginalized, but I mean, let's be real here, you know, historically excluded is, you know, is an accurate term, as far as, you know, yeah, like, you know, having that, you know, conversation of creating affirming and validating spaces for students. So thank you for that. So let's keep that conversation going about the classroom. So, you know, one thing that comes to mind, I think is in all of our minds, is that we're still very much in a pandemic. There seems to be a new variant every month. And I'm curious how, whether it's the community college level or the CSU level, like how has digital learning spaces or, being in remote or online courses impacted students in this, you know, in this context?
Yeah, the pandemic has been really, it's been really damaging, I think, to students. And I think this, we conducted a lot of polling of students. And what we saw is that, you know, students were experiencing, you know, extreme, you know, anxiety, you know, depression, mental health issues as a result of the pandemic, as well as they're experiencing, you know, food. They didn't know where their next meal was going to come from. You know,
yeah,
they were worried
exactly.
About housing. They were worried about, you know, so many issues. And then now, and then with that, you know, transitioning everything to online, you know, not. So I think as we're, you know, the COVID pandemic really helped to influence, you know, the digital learning. And when we're thinking about designing within the digital world now, you know, mm-hmm. it's really essential to be even more engaging because, mm-hmm. you know, our students need to be engaged and really, since they're not interacting so much in person with our, you know, with our educators, with their fellows, with their-
Exactly, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah, it needs to be a really, an environment that, you know, is engaging. And what this means is that it also needs to be rigorous. It needs to be challenging mm-hmm. them. It needs to be engaging. It needs to be relevant so that they want to come into the classroom that is now digital and learn and really participate. And what this means is also like ensuring that we're being really critical and mindful and looking at, you know, what is in the digital world now, what is potentially even widening equity gaps, you know, and how can we address this? And what are the barriers that students are facing? You know, asking students, polling students, you know, what is working in the classroom? What is not, in really engaging our students as to be part of this environment that they're contributing to their own education and helping to shape their education mm-hmm. to make it really engaging and rigorous and supportive to their learning.
Yeah, thank you for that. I think last question here, you know, what call to action do you have, especially for, you know, not just like higher education leaders, but, you know, higher education leaders who are, helping students or want to help students navigate these digital spaces, and especially, you know, trying to create engaging content, especially in math. What are some recommendations that you have?
I love the part of recommendations.
I'm like, I know you're a policy analyst. I'm like, I know you got recommendations.
I think the first recommendation is really intended for like policymakers like nationwide. I think one mm-hmm. is that they should consider legislation that eliminates remedial math classes.
Mm-hmm.
And that we can look at California as a bright spot in that, in helping to shape the way that other state leaders can think about additional legislation to help support and ensuring, you know, we're focusing on equity and closing, you know, racial equity gaps throughout in where's the system in math. And then specifically for higher education leaders, like nationwide, our recommendation here would be similarly to adopt goal of eliminating, you know, those unnecessary remedial classes, reducing their current remedial course offerings, and as well as, you know, instead focusing on the co-requisite approach where that is providing students that additional support while they're enrolling in the transfer level class. And all this connected with, you know, providing options that are both, you know, digital as well as in person, so that students have multiple options in accessing these transfer level classes in the way that they hope to engage in through their education, be that digital or in person.
Got it. Thank you for that. And I'm curious, one last thing, I promise. So how can students and, you know, faculty alike, folks in higher education, how can they best engage with these assembly bills that are coming down the pipeline?
I would say one way to engage is, I think to the Education Trust West, we have a coalition of focused on remedial education reform. So that can be one way to engage, mm-hmm. to join our coalition and to learn about what are the specific, like the bills that we're working on. We're happy to conduct presentations and to share these resources across the state to national leaders. So that could be a one way to engage. Another way to engage can be focused on, you know, reaching out to the, mm-hmm. to the Bright Spot community colleges and CSU campuses that are doing really great work on remedial education reform. Some Bright Spot colleges in the community college system, for instance, are Cuyumaca College, Pasadena College, and these, mm-hmm. these Bright Spots can also really be really supportive in sharing, you know, what are their best practices, how are they able to get this done, and to be able to replicate this, you know, across the state and across the nation.
Awesome. Thank you so much for that, Denise. So with that, you know, again, thank you for sharing your experiences with your work with Education Trust West. Folks, we just heard from Denise Castro, policy analyst at the Education Trust West. If you'd like to learn more about their work, you can find them online and social media, Education Trust West. This is Elaine Bernal. STEM digital learning strategist for diversity, equity, and inclusion for WCET. Thanks for listening.